happened to was trying to nail Brian's picture before, I think. We'll just take a minute before our next speaker, who is Bob McDavid, to get things organised. You missed a sight while staring at Brian. If you all turned around, you would have seen Trevor Cullen carrying a naked woman down the stairs. So just take a breather for a second while we get things set up. It's a great pleasure to introduce Bob McDavid, our weatherman. He's going to presumably tell you what sort of crop you're going to get this coming season.
Thank you. Yes. I probably need a page shifter person for my laptop. Somebody who can press the space bar every so often. Is that Mark? Oh, you've got a remote. Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll try that. Which one do I press? Point it down. Yes, I'm away. Mark, hand those out for me. Right, I'm going to, for the next half hour or so, talk to you about the weather for the coming season. My name is Bob McDavid from Met Service, the weather ambassador. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. I'm going to cover all these things. Of course, your bees are probably your best barometer. That's true. But I'm not really a beekeeper, so I just watch my barometer, which looks like one of those ones. The one on the left is called an aneroid barometer. It has a little sac inside, which is partial vacuum. So the size of it expands when the pressure outside falls. It contracts when the pressure outside rises. And that gives you a challenge. The one on the right is a digital barometer, which is very good. Hands up those of you who have got one of these at home. It's about 40%. That's not bad. That's cool. I ask the Boy Scouts nowadays to get about 30%. I don't even know what they are. So, hands up those of you who use your bees to do the forecasting for you. Oh, 10%. Oh, okay, that's all right. Oh, yeah, turned around. Well, I thought I'd, for the first 5 minutes, give you a little bit of history about the barometer. We used to have a forecaster in Met Service, Henry Hill. He's dead now, but he was a very proficient forecaster, and he also kept bees. So he was able to kind of monitor the season by asking his bees, or kind of working out what the bees were responding to in terms of how the season progressed. And Henry Hill was such an enthusiastic forecaster that the Met Service have named a memorial after him, the Henry Hill Memorial Prize, which is given each year to the most enthusiastic person in Met Service. I've only got it once. He's not like that. But the first thing you should be aware of your barometer is it does go up and down twice a day. This is an atmospheric tide induced in the atmosphere by the passage of the sun. Okay, the sun only goes around once a day, but this atmospheric tide goes twice a day. A place like Darwin is very strong. In Auckland, it's about a hectopascal. It does mean that if you go and tap your barometer, that one on the wall, at the wrong time of the day, you'll get a wrong reading because the pressure naturally falls during the afternoon, the early part of the afternoon. The best times to actually set your barometer are around about morning tea time and the time you go to bed, 9:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. And maybe that's a little bit early for you. Well, that's the best time to actually read your barometer, because then you'll be reading it from the top of one of these crests to the next top of one of these crests. Okay. We'll do a little bit of history, as I say, for 5 minutes or so roll your eyes back and go to sleep. This is Mr. Blaise Pascal. No, he didn't make the sweets. He's actually a 17th century mathematician from France. It's to his credit that we call all of our isobars in hectopascals. We remember the name Pascal because of a particular experiment that he did. His first name is Blaise, but we call them hectopascals because hecto is a Roman, it's 100, it's in the metric unit scale, means 100. So 100 pascals is a hectopascal. The main thing goes back to when he was about 25 in 1760 or so, And there was a big argument going on over in Italy between Galileo, who just before his death, and the Pope about the concept of the vacuum. The vacuum is a space with nothing in it. The Pope contended that God could not create a vacuum because you can't create nothing. See, very logical. Whereas Galileo says, I'll give you one next Christmas. As a Christmas present. And they did these experiments over in Italy, whereby they actually made vacuums by taking a tube of mercury, filling it up with mercury, and tipping it upside down into a bath of mercury. And of course, some of the mercury would flow out into the bath, but there'd be some space left at the top of the tube. No air in it. It's a vacuum, an area of nothingness. And they discovered that the size of this vacuum was actually a weather forecaster. Whenever it expanded, it meant that the air around the vacuum, around the apparatus, was actually lowering. Lowering pressure would normally lead to rain. And rising pressure would clear the rain. So there was a relationship. Well, the records of this kind of discussion going over in Italy was carried over to France. By some monk who never spoke a word, so we won't mention him. But Pascal came across it at the local book club, and he dived into it. He was really intrigued with it. And he had a long discussion with this bloke, who was Descartes, who was the biggest mathematician of the time. And Pascal said, yep, I can make a vacuum. And Descartes said, there's no such thing. And Pascal actually went on and said, look, I can actually show you that pressure changes the size of the vacuum. And so in September 1648, he asked his sister, Jacqueline, to get her husband to climb this hill in the middle of France. That hill there, the one at the back, Puy de Dôme. Anybody been there? Right in the middle of France, big hill like that. Forget about the crater in the front. But Pascal's brother-in-law climbed that hill with a big mercury barometer strapped to his back, and sure enough, every time he went up 1,000 feet, the size of that vacuum got bigger. In other words, the pressure was getting less. In other words, pressure changed with height, experiment concluded. But as a sort of a memorial of that experiment, we always call them hectopascals to this very day. Amazing, isn't it? Briefly mentioning the next person about weather forecasting is Christophorus Henricus Diedrichus Buys Ballot. He was a Dutchman, and in 1857 he said the wind goes clockwise around the lows. The wind goes clockwise around the lows. So if you've got a low centre there, you draw isobars around it. The wind is, if you're looking into the wind, the low's on your left. And from that, we worked out to draw weather maps. Lovely person, very interesting history. But just bringing it back to New Zealand, this bloke here, he knew about Buys Ballot. His name's Robert Fitzroy. He was the one who put all those words on the barometer. On the right-hand side, you can't quite read it yet, he's got the word fear. The top, change. And over on the left, rain. So there's even when the pressure is low, it increases the chances of rain. When the pressure is high, it decreases the chances of rain. Basically, the standard atmospheric pressure on this Earth is 1,012. If you want to be precise, 1,013.26 hectopascals. But whenever the barometer is above 1,012, there's got to be somewhere else around the world which is counterbalancingly low, below 1,012. All around the atmosphere at every one time, the sea pressure has got to average out 1,013.26. This is called the continuity of mass. It means our atmosphere is neither getting bigger nor smaller. And it's true. Oh, building up a little bit, we pick up the odd meteors, but basically, We've got the same pressure around the planet. Whenever it's low, like it is today, there's somewhere else on the Earth where it's counterbalancing high. And that's why we've got only 50% clouds on this planet. We were a water planet. But the air will only rise where the air is thinner than normal. So your normal places for getting clouds is where the pressure is below 1,012. Where it's above 1,012, the air is sinking to compensate, and therefore it kills the clouds. So, okay, water vapor, 50%, about 10% of the water of the atmosphere is water vapor, and it's one of the most important greenhouse gases. But hey, it's constant, it's neither increasing nor decreasing, so it doesn't really come into the equation of change. Robert Fitzroy was actually the second governor of New Zealand. Fitzroy Bay, there's quite a few places around Auckland named after him. So that's the Kiwi connection to the barometer. Now, he designed this chart, which has been handed out to you, thank you, which will show you a very quick forecast. It's 80% correct, as good as you be. Which will, if the pressure is rising, you use the one on the left. If the pressure is steady, you use the one on the right. And if the pressure is falling, you turn the page. And each little area where is demarked into whether the pressure is above or below, I've chosen about 1,015 rather than 1,012. But 1,012 is actually the pivot point. But anyway, you can work straight from this and do your own forecasts. Work out what the pressure is doing, work out which way the wind is blowing from, and you can work out a forecast. I'll do it now. I've got a barometer here. It's been played around with while we're going around the roads, but it's steady, 1,012. 1,012 is... And it's a southwesterly out there. It's actually gone around to the northwest. Fair for 1 to 2 days. Once it spins around to the north, it's going to be raining within 18 hours. Okay? So that's my forecast. Just by looking at the barometer, it's going to be fine for the rest of the weekend.
I'll feel it the next 4 hours until it rains.
We'll see how we go. Have you seen this? This is a slight improvement on just the barometer and the wind trick. This here is a 7-day forecast based on the computer model. It's available on metservice.com. Go to metservice.com, click on maps and rain radar on the left. Then click on rain forecast and select 7 day at the top. 7 days, you can see the mouse scrolling down on the left-hand side, 6-hour time steps. What we do is we look at 4 different global models twice a day, the UK model, the EC model, the ensemble model, and the GFS model. We pick the best that we think of the lot, and then we transfer it in through our system and available on the net. The isobars are still there, hectopascal is still alive, but we also put the wind barbs in, and the wind blows from the feathered end to the pointed end, and each bar or feather is worth 10 knots, half a feather, 5 knots. So for today, Saturday, it's forecasting that there will be a front arriving over Auckland around about late Sunday, the next real rain band coming in over Auckland on Sunday, and it gives you, as I say, 7 days to play with. This one was downloaded last Wednesday for another talk I'm using for this one as well. And we update it twice a day. Has anybody come across it? Those hands up, those who are using it. You see, it's the same people who've got barometers, almost. But it's only 30%. So 70% of you have never even heard about it. Have you tried some other websites to get the weather? Yes? Yes, put your hands up. Met the UW?
Yeah,
couple. Try this. It's free, and it's got a nicer colour scheme. Plus also, we take a choice of 4 different global models for Met the UW, only just UGMS. Lovely, Steve. Okay, must move faster. Planet Earth, the last 2 weeks, speed it up. You can see the passage of 1 day by the flashing of the temperature on the continents. Basically, just showing you that most of that, as I was saying, that water vapour, the on planet Earth, it's always 50% cloud, never much more, never much less. That's because of the quality of our atmosphere. The rising areas have got to balance by the falling areas. And the rising areas are where the clouds are, the falling areas are where they're not. You'll see, even here, around about that latitude and that latitude, 30 degrees north and 30 degrees south, there's not much cloud. Okay? Let's just go a little bit smoother. Go to a different channel on our satellite picture and look at the water vapor channel. And so shades of white now are where the water vapor is. Black is where there is no water vapor. And you can see it moving around the atmosphere like rivers, rivers of fuel. Because water vapor is the fuel which energizes the wind and the rain. Now you'll see that most of it's actually being produced over the equator. That's where you get your main rising air. And then it gets, once it hits the roof, top of the equator, some of it goes down into one hemisphere, and the other goes off into the other hemisphere. So we get our share of water vapor coming in from the tropics. As it goes across that magical latitude of about 30 degrees south, which it all seems to disappear, all the clouds, you can see the rivers of moisture anyway making their way into the roaring 40s, which is the 40 degree latitude further south, where you get all that beautiful motion of like a washing machine down there, isn't it? A mixture of pattern chaos in the roaring 40s, all the air moving through quickly. If we actually get a little bit academic and look at the average pressure and wind patterns for each month, top right is the month as we go through the year, you'll see that khaki coloured zone. Don't worry about the northern hemisphere, look at the southern hemisphere. That khaki coloured zone of 30 degrees south. A ring of high pressure right around the planet which kills clouds. Some people call it the horse latitudes. I call it the subtropical ridge. I'm introducing it to you today because it's very important for the seasonal forecast, the subtropical ridge. I think I should give it another name, but anyway, that's the name it's got. You'll see that during the winter, it moves across Australia, the cold deserts. During the summer, it moves off Australia and into the Aussie Bight. So there it is, winter over Australia, summer moves off Australia and over the Aussie Bight. So Australia controls our local subtropical ridge. When the subtropical ridge is where all those highs pop up, you see on the weather map. You see them out left over Australia, you say, oh good, here comes a high. Should be here for the weekend and never arise, you know? Yeah. Sometimes those highs migrate our way and sometimes they don't. In fact, we're about the only part of the planet which does have migratory anticyclones that do roll in from the left. The other places are South Africa, Australia itself, and to some extent around Japan. Nowhere else do the highs behave the way they do here in New Zealand. We have special weather here. So we'll take a weather map, we'll draw the trade winds, which are those ones up sort of to the north of us over the tropics, and the roaring 40s. And of course the subtropical ridge, oh, is that green line in the middle. All you have to do to find it, just draw the lines from high to high. Gotcha? Every weather map, you can work out where the subtropical ridge is. If it's to the north of us, we're going to have westerlies. We're going to have winter. If it's to the south of us or over the South Island, up here we'll have easterlies. It will be summertime. And it does play around. If it's very weak, which it is at present, we will have lows. In other words, we'll have unsettled weather. Ask the subtropical ridge. If it's talking to you and if you can understand what it's saying, you can become a very good seasonal forecaster. In the summertime, the subtropical ridge moves right down over the South Island. In the wintertime, it moves right north over between New Zealand and the islands. But to do a real seasonal forecast, I can't just use the ups and downs of the barometer to work with because they go up and down maybe once or twice a week. So I need something which changes more slowly. So I use sea surface temperatures because they never change more than about a degree per month. And they'll give me the background trends and they're related to seasonal forecasting and they'll tell me what the subtropical ridge is going to do. That's the sea surface temperatures average over the whole globe for April. By themselves, they don't say much to me. They're not talking to me. I can't see a trend. I need to do something to get the message out. So if I subtract the 30-year average, or the average this month for the last 30 years and see what is different this season. That will give you a clue. There we go. Now, all the blue areas are colder than normal, and all the khaki is actually warmer than normal. So we've divided the ocean into warmer bits and colder bits. It's just like kind of when we looked at the atmosphere, we saw where the clouds were and where they weren't. They were acting as traces. Now I can watch those move around and get an idea of what the seasons are doing. If you have a large area of cold water, along the equator in the middle of the Pacific, see that blue zone there? That's a La Nina. That's what a La Nina means, cold water. Along the equator in the middle of the Pacific. But if we swap that for hot water, then we call it an El Nino. The history behind that is that the people living in Peru, they were all speaking Spanish, and various years they would notice warm water flooding from the equator onto their coast. It would do impacts, it would bring rain to the desert, it would allow flowers to fruit and so forth. So they thought this was a blessing, and they would name the period of good weather after the festival that they were having when the seas started to warm. And that festival was El Niño de Navidad, the child of the nativity, Christmas. So that's how it's got the name El Niño. 50 years ago that was good, but the last 50 years the El Niños have been particularly nasty around Peru, and instead of bringing flowers, they've been bringing landslides. So El Niño has lost its good name. And that's why they called the other side of the coin the La Niña, you see. So that's how El Niño and La Niña got their names. When you get hot water around that part of the world, we normally end up with cold water. What's happening is the subtropical ridge gets pushed around by the El Niño or La Niña. The subtropical ridge goes north towards the equator in an El Niño. And that's why we get more sou'westers in New Zealand than an El Niño. Go back to the La Niña. Cold water around the Pacific central area, hot water around New Zealand, lots more northeasterlies. The subtropical ridge gets pushed southwards, further south than normal. It plays around with our seasonal weather. So if we can understand El Niño and La Niña, we can understand the subtropical ridge and we can do a seasonal forecast. You see where I'm going with this? Let's have a look at the last 4 months. Top is the sea surface temperatures. How they've been changing, and the bottom, for New Zealand, is the anomalies and how they've been behaving. But unfortunately, you just miss out the exciting bit. You do get to see the middle of the Pacific, which is interesting, because beginning of the year we had some cold water, that blue bit, over the equator. And now it's all turned around and gone slightly warmer than normal. In other words, during summer we had a La Niña, and that meant more easterlies for our part of the world. Over the last few weeks, last month or so, the La Niña's all gone, and we're back into neutral territory. And I've got 3 minutes. Okay, I'll go fast. So that means, moving on. Even the Southern Oscillation Index, which is another way of measuring this, shows you how La Niña is faded. Just like when we had one last fading La Niña last July, we're now having a fading La Niña. Last July, when the La Niña faded, we had 3 big depressions all in a row. Therefore, hence, and so, and thus, and it's quite easy and logical to conclude, we should have 3 big depressions during the fading of this La Niña. We've had 2. There's one more to come. First one was on Anzac Day. You didn't feel it here, but it ripped lots of winds through Fiordland and Southland. Second one was a very long-lasting one, which we've had over the last week or so, and it brought snow to the South Island. Oh, remember the subtropical ridge? What does it do during a neutral year? Wow, that's quite interesting. You get a mixture of both. So here's my weather forecast for winter. We're into neutral territory, not La Niña, not El Niño. I don't know how that got there. Oh yes, that's what we're having now. This is the disturbed westerlies. which are typical of winter, with the fronts moving in across us from the Tasman Sea. That's pressure pattern number one for the coming winter. It's a normal pressure pattern for winter. Notice the subtropical ridge is north of us under that one. But the recent most expensive storm was late July 2008. Huge low, took a long time to cross New Zealand. So we're going to have three of those. We're on to number two now. The third one, don't know. I think it should be sometime early June, probably. It's not showing up on any of the computer models at present, so it's not in the next week, but it's in my mind for sometime early June. It's got to happen. It happened last year. This was followed 6 weeks later last year by a large high. Large high centred over Chatham Islands. So that's on the weather menu for the coming winter. Large high over there. That was a very, very large high. It broke the records, 1,047 good old hectopascals. And it actually was the one which stored all the fronts over the hydro lakes. Remember, beginning of September last year, they were talking about, we're going to run out of electricity in a couple of weeks. Remember that? And then 2 weeks later, they said, oh, no, they're full now. Remember that? The high. That's what changed the lake levels in the hydro lakes. That high stalled the fronts. I'm expecting one of those 6 weeks, no, maybe the 8 weeks from now. So sometime late July. One of those. So the hydro lakes will be full up. I'm also forecasting one of these is sort of a limbo in between. See the subtropical ridge? Dateline eastwards, it's all up north. Subtropical ridge thinks it's El Nino, so it's way up north. But over the Tasman Sea, subtropical ridge is way down south. So it's almost coming, bringing air from the 55 south, straight on to the South Island. So that means that we get a split subtropical ridge, really typical of neutral territory, and this one brings southerlies to the South Island, which is good for the ski fields. That actually brought snow last November to them. So here's the forecast. We're having neutral conditions. On fewer occasions are we going to have those passing anticyclones we did have a couple of months ago. More occasions, lows. Some from the south, some from the north. Thank you.
Time for a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
Will our third depression happen with the next moon phase?
The moon ain't got much to do with it. The moon doesn't know about the subtropical ridge, but let's see. Last time we had those three lows, the gap between the second and the third low was about a month. So I'm thinking probably mid-June. What's the moon doing now?
It's waning out.
It's waning out, I see it on my watch. maybe, I don't know. Don't think so. The moon don't know about our weather. Yes. Yeah.
We can buy your watch.
You have everything. You want me to hold it?
Trade me. Just barometer watch. I'm trading it, I'm going for 120. Right, I think I'll ask more questions later because we've got another talk speaker. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a 50 for you.